This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Big Y World Class Market, Brennan Smoke Shop, Rodenizer Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmower, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Base is empty, and the 1-1. Ground ball to first, down for it is Pierce. He'll take it himself. The Red Sox sweep. They take all three games here against Tampa Bay. This one in 11 innings.
So apparently 3 days have changed everything in the minds of Red Sox fans. I'm not sure I totally agree, but it's a good place to start. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. We'll take your calls up until 7 o'clock. And as I mentioned, you always during this time of year, between the Bruins and the playoffs for now and the Celtics in the playoffs, that the scheduling of this programming, of this program rather, can be a little erratic. So tomorrow night, because the Bruins will be playing rather game 7 at the TD Garden, there will be no baseball reporters. So if you want to talk about your baseball team and you should feel better about them, now is your chance. Okay, 617-779-0985, because there will be no baseball reporters tomorrow night. Two quick announcements at the beginning of the show. Number one, tonight's game, scheduled between Boston and Detroit, has been postponed. There is no game tonight. Chris Sale was due to pitch. Instead, he will pitch in the day game tomorrow. There will be a day-night doubleheader, 1 o'clock tomorrow, and then as scheduled, the night game with Hector Velasquez. So if you have tickets for tonight's game, they are good for the daytime tomorrow, and you'll still get to see Chris Sale pitch. Murray, I'm assuming I have all that right?
That is 100% correct.
Okay, so because the last thing the Red Sox want me to do is announce anything about tickets that's wrong, and then they'll really hate me. I mean, they hate me enough as it is.
It's just it's a mild hate.
But if I start messing with their gate receipts, boy, then there'll be hell to pay. So again, that's number one. Number two, if you don't listen to this program during the afternoon, and those of you that are driving home probably don't, you don't know who Billy from Rhode Island is. Billy is an older caller, I think, based on his voice, who likes to call in and bust my chops and tell me how negative I am about the Red Sox and was all too eager to rub my nose in it today now that they've swept the Rays. To which my answer is, should you really be gloating? Should you really be gloating? The Red Sox are 9-13. There's still 4 games under 500. So I liked what I saw over the weekend too. It was better. They're still not right, and they still have plenty of issues. So let's not go get all hog wild here and start taking it out of your pants. Keep it in your pants. They're still 9-13. So you don't dig the kind of hole that the Red Sox dug going 6-13 in your first 19 games and then solve all of your problems in one weekend. Okay, you just don't do it. Now that said, there are a couple things I liked over the weekend. First of all, in the first game of the series, you obviously won that game, although you tried to blow a lead in the process. The second game of the series, what I liked more than anything was the way it ended. Christian Vasquez picking a runner off first base to win that game. Excellent. And then the finale, well, it's hard not to like the way that one ended too. Red Sox were down in the middle innings of that game. They get a lead on a questionable managerial decision by Kevin Cash. They get the lead. They give it up. Matt Barnes with another home run allowed 2 days in a row that he did that. Nonetheless, they manufacture a run in extra innings, and they win the game, and they get out of there with 3 Ws. Okay, so you should feel good about all of that. Okay, not everything, and you shouldn't feel good about the big picture. But if you want to tell me that you started to see signs of life from the Red Sox over the weekend, I would generally agree with you. Okay, so that's where we're going to start. We're going to start with the big picture. Then I want to get to some of the particulars, because there were some bad developments from the weekend, too. One more notable than all the others, and that concerns another injury to the starting rotation. So I see a bunch of you lined up already. We'll get right to your phone calls, but I do want to ask Jim Murray before we even begin. Murray, are the Red Sox out of it? No. Out of their slump.
No, I don't think so. No. They played very well and smart baseball for the first time this season against a really good team. I don't think that the Rays are a fluke, but no, I don't think that they're out of the woods at all.
I mean, how could you? Like, this is the part that I find it. Like, all of a sudden, they won a few games and everything's okay. You still lost two in New York in the middle of the week, and they had to grind these wins out. These weren't runaway, steamrolling Tampa Bay wins. They weren't anything close to that. And in some ways, that makes them better because they had to execute in the late innings and they had to do some things right. But you're still four games under. It's still April 22nd. You still have to finish the month strongly and then get some sort of stability to the whole operation. Yeah, let's not go too crazy. They had a nice weekend.
Yeah, Saturday's game was the one that still had a lot, I think, a lot of the signs of red flags and issues with this team. Well, they're up, what, 5-0 basically in that first inning after the grand slam from Benintendi. And credit to Vasquez picking up Pham late to end that thing. But, man, that bullpen seemed real leaky, and it felt like all a matter of time before they puked that game away.
I mean, and this is how it works with bad teams, right? Good teams complement each other very well. And the days they don't hit, they pitch well. When they don't pitch, they hit well. With bad teams, you know what happens? When they start to get starting pitching, their bullpen craps out, which looks like it's starting to happen to this team a little bit. Nonetheless, three W's. You should feel better about the weekend, but do not delude yourself into thinking that they are somehow out of this slump because they're not out of it yet. We need a much longer stretch before we can say that. We'll get to your call, 617-779-0985. Chris is in a car. Chris, I'll tell you what, Chris, sit tight because Jimmy Stewart, our producer, tells me we have breaking news.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This breaking news from Ken Rosenthal, MLB insider at The Athletic, who just tweeted that the Red Sox, Nathan Eovaldi, will undergo surgery tomorrow to remove the loose bodies in his elbow, according to a source. Had similar procedure last year, missed 2 months while with the Rays.
Okay, so I'm not the least bit surprised by this. We were going to get to Eovaldi a little bit later in the show, but given that we have the breaking news now, we might as well introduce the topic. Nathan Eovaldi, reported by Kenny Rosenthal again, as Murray just told you. Rosenthal just tweeted, Nathan Eovaldi will undergo surgery tomorrow to remove, quote-unquote, loose bodies in his elbow. Typically, loose bodies to me mean bone chips. And I suppose there are fragments of something else in there that aren't bone chips. You know, who knows what? But they're going to clean out his elbow. It's an arthroscopic procedure. He'll be out 2 months. And at the risk of saying I told you so, I told you so. So I told you last November when they re-signed this guy, or maybe it was December, I wanted him back too. I liked what I saw. The amount of money they gave him was outrageous. It was outrageous. And the reason that matters now is that the Red Sox are within, I don't know, $7-8 million of that luxury tax threshold that they don't want to go over. They now have $17 million in luxury tax dollars committed to Nathan Eovaldi. And I don't think they have the money to go out and sign Dallas Keuchel or someone of the like. And if there were a starter on the market that they wanted, they don't have the amount of money they would need to spend it. If Eovaldi were making half of his current salary, which is what he should be making, somewhere around $8 to $10 million to me was the number, they gave him $17 million. Now, as a result, you might be hamstrung in terms of finding a replacement. So, Murray, correct me if I'm wrong. Do the Red Sox have a day off? No, you said it's a four-game series, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so you got a doubleheader tomorrow, and then you have games on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They're going to need a pitcher on the weekend. That's five starters in 4 days. They're going to need a starting pitcher on the weekend, so they're going to have to figure something out there. And remember, Stephen Wright popped for PEDs. You don't have him for half the season. So you still think they're out of their slump?
They don't have a day off until May 9th.
Okay, so there you go. It's a bad timing for this injury to Eovaldi. But we'll go to Chris now, who's in a car. Chris, what do you got?
That's a tough take, and I agree with you. I totally agree with the overpay, and that now we're hamstrung. I was just wondering if, not to change the subject, but was there anything from the three-game sweep that you liked? Like, was there a shining light there that you liked over this weekend? And I was like, because I agree with you, Tony. I'm not out of the woods.
Thanks, Tone.
Yeah, so Chris, I'll tell you what, there were a handful of things I liked in this series, not just one. Okay, a handful of things. And most of them were sort of centered around good situational play. So I'm going to give you the actual particulars of those when we come back. Because, again, to me, there were some very clear situational plays where the Red Sox executed and did things that earlier in the year they were not doing. And some of the things that earlier in the year they had no chance to do because their starting pitchers were digging them in such big holes that everything else became irrelevant. So, you know, advancing a runner or getting a key out at a key time or a good at bat and drawing a walk or what have you. Like, a lot of those things didn't matter in the early part of the year because their starting pitching was so flipping bad that there was no real opportunity for them to do some of the situational things correctly. Now their starting pitching is stabilized. I think over the last four games, their starting ERA is under 3. And the bad news is that they've lost Eovaldi, whose last start was a good one. He pitched well against the Yankees last week. Nonetheless, Eovaldi having surgery tomorrow, he'll be lost for, it feels like, a couple of months. But we'll get to the particulars of the things that were encouraging by the Red Sox over the weekend as they continue to try digging themselves out of the hole they put themselves in the first 19 games. We'll get to those good plays next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
0-1. That's in there for a strike. Throw to first base. He picked him off! Fam is out. The ball game is over.
What a way to end the game.
Unbelievable. Vasquez comes up gunning, and Fam is cut down, and the Red Sox win it.
Look at this, Pierce, that's a prearranged play. That's a prearranged play, and they executed perfectly. Vasquez, he knows he's going that way. Pierce probably put the play on. You saw him taking a big secondary lead. They put on a play, and they get the last out of the game.
How about that play? Christian Vasquez picks a runner off first to end that game on Saturday night. It's precisely the kind of thing that was happening to the Red Sox earlier in the year. Stupid play, right? Stupid play by the Rays. But good for Vasquez for taking advantage of it. Which brings me to the Rodenheiser Heat Zone. Who's hot? Brought to you by our friends at Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric. And we're going to go with Christian Vasquez for obvious reasons. I think he only had a couple of hits in the series. A home run. So he had a home run in the first game. He threw out the runner to end the second game. And then Vasquez had the sacrifice fly to break the tie in the 11th inning yesterday.
He hit one in New York, too. He's been swinging a hot bat. They had him at DH tonight if they actually played this game.
I think he has 4 home runs this year already.
Pretty good.
So Vasquez is off to, overall, I should say, a pretty good start. Again, he's not an offensive player. But talk about impacting the game positively in all facets. Really, all 3 games. Home run in the first one, threw a guy out at first base, picked him off to end that game on a play that he called. And Jerry Remy did a good job of highlighting this in the broadcast yesterday, that Vasquez looked down to first when he saw that Tommy Pham, right? Was getting off the bag too far for the Rays and sort of flapped his gloves a bunch of time as if to still tell Steve Pierce, hey, be ready because I may come down there. On the next pitch, he gunned it down. Fam was out easily, not even close. I mean, talk about getting caught with your pants down. And then yesterday, hits a sacrifice fly to win the game. So Vasquez really had himself a nice weekend. And there were a couple of plays that a number of plays that really should have you encouraged by how the Red Sox are operating. Okay. Before I get to those in particular, let's take Hip in a car who wants to talk about another key performer from the weekend. Go ahead, Hip.
Hey, Tony, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering what your thoughts on Chavis's role in the on this team is going to be, considering how the Red Sox, I guess, mismanaged or sort of didn't have a spot for Swihart on the defense. Where do you see Chavis fitting in on this defense? I don't know if he can play in the major league level in any spot for us out in the outfield.
Okay, so, and for those of you who you know, didn't catch it over the weekend, and I don't blame you, there's a lot going on at this time of year. What a week. Right? How about a week? What a week in Boston this week.
A flurry.
Bruins tomorrow night, Game 7 against the Leafs. Again, another Game 7 with the Bruins and the Leafs. The Red Sox look like they're starting to wake up, and I'm not telling you they should be number one on your list right now, but they played better over the weekend. You have a doubleheader at Fenway Park tomorrow. The Patriots draft, the NFL draft, starts on Thursday night, and the Celtics open the second round of their series probably over the weekend against the Milwaukee Bucks. Okay, so not often you get all four guns blazing here at the same time. As it relates to Michael Chavis, Chavis was called up. He started at second base yesterday. And to me, this is one of the bigger stories from the weekend. So I'll ask our producer, Jimmy Stewart, if he could. Chavis, to me, was involved in a key play in this game yesterday. Here's what happened.
Ready now for the 1-2. Ground ball to third. Devers up with it to second. One out on to first. Double play. 5-4-3. Price gets out of the inning.
And Chavis getting his first opportunity to turn one over.
Yeah.
At second base.
First career start, and he makes it at second base. He's more of a third baseman by far.
Left foot, back off. Clear yourself for the runner. Make the throw. He's got a third baseman's arm. So that's not the problem. The problem is the footwork. And he takes the easy route there, backing off, which is a smart thing to do when you're just learning a new position. The thing about it is, what makes it easier right now is you don't have to worry about guys coming barreling into your second base. So, you know, you don't have to be that spiffy around the bag.
Okay, and Chavis is not spiffy around the bag, and that's not his fault, and that's not a criticism. Chavis, a third baseman who swings a bat with big power. They showed some of the home runs he hit down in Pawtucket. Absolute freaking missiles. Bombs. And this kid's going to strike out a lot. He's also going to hit the occasional ball out of the ballpark. So, Jimmy Stewart, I know you're a bit of a baseball junkie. Do you remember a guy who played for the Marlins at second base, Dan Ugla?
Oh, yeah. He you guys played remember for the Braves,
him?
Too.
Yeah, okay, yeah. The Braves. So, Ugla was your classic sort of steroid muscle head. And I don't even know if he was a steroid guy, but he struck me as one. So that's
assume
totally,
he was.
Okay, so that, you know, again, totally unfair of me to even say that.
It's okay.
But he felt like one of those guys.
Yeah.
Okay, he felt like one of those guys. Ugla hit the crap out of the ball and looked like a third baseman playing second base. That's how Chavis feels to me. But I'll tell you what. I'll take it. Because the Red Sox have a problem at second base. And I said this on the air at the end of last week. Dustin Pedroia really complicates your roster. Because you have a second baseman that can't play second base all the time because of his knee. So they put Pedroia back on the DL. They brought up Su-Wei Lin temporarily, but now Chavis is here. Chavis only played like four or five games at second base in AAA. And so, but hit a few bombs while he was down there. And that double play he turned yesterday, nothing spectacular, but you know what? He caught the ball. He made the exchange relatively quickly and seamlessly. He threw the ball to first and completed the double play, and he didn't get killed. And Remy made a good point. You don't need great agility around the bag anymore. You don't need that. And so if you can get a guy there that can make the basic play, hit the occasional home run, because let's face it, Nunez is trick or treat too. Holt's on the DL, or IL. Nunez is on the IL. So you know what? I like the move. How do you like that, Billy in Rhode Island? Something I like. I like the move. Let's find out if this kid can give him anything there. Second base has been a problem for this team for 2 years. Pedroia's not coming back, folks. And if he does, he's not an everyday second baseman. So at this stage, can we find a solution other than Eduardo Nunez or Brock Holt, who really are bench players and utility guys? And then the other thing I like about it is maybe this kid will give, what's his name? Devers. Rafael Devers, a kick in the ass at third base. Okay, so that double play yesterday, Devers to Chavis to, I think it was who, Moreland at the time. In the first inning, two men on, one out. The Red Sox in jeopardy of falling behind again early. It was a big double play. Okay, it was a big double play. situationally, there was another thing that happened in that game yesterday in the late innings that I really, really liked. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Does he take the bunt off 2-0? Or leave it on?
Still on, and he gets it down. Nobody covering third. He's got a gun to first. Close and got him in a bang-bang play. The runners do advance to second and third.
Oh, what a great bunt by Bradley. Very, very nice.
So the Sox have two men in scoring position with one down in the 11th inning.
Got to get a run out of this.
Yep, any way they can. Here's the 1-0. Swinging away, and he tags that to center field. Kiermaier racing back, back, back. He runs it down, makes the catch, tagging up. Here comes Devers. He is in to score. Vasquez delivers.
When you talk about the bottom three guys in your lineup doing the job, a walk, a sacrifice by Jackie, a beautiful sacrifice, and then the sacrifice fly by Vasquez.
I mean, it was textbook. In terms of producing a run in the late innings of a close game, two men on, Bradley comes up, gets up in the count, and they kept the bunt on. Don't reinvent the wheel, Alex Cora. Thankfully, you didn't. But not complicated. Bunt him over to second and third. Vasquez gets up 1-0. Fastball down the middle. Took like a half swing. It was like a nice, easy golf swing just to prove that you don't have to swing hard to hit it far. And he hit it to the warning track in center field and got the run home. Textbook. Textbook. It was just good execution, simple, nothing fancy. Which is why Jay in Providence is on the phone. Go ahead, Jay.
Right, exactly. That's baseball 101, and I was so happy to see that on Sunday. But on Saturday, at the top of the eighth inning, Steve Pierce led off with a double, and then J.D. is up, so obviously you can't bunt with J.D. But when he drew a walk, and Xander's up, and you're up one run, I mean, it's a righty-on-righty with Devers on deck. I think that was a textbook bunt situation, too, to add on an insurance run in the top of the eighth.
Okay, so Jay, look, I didn't see the game on Saturday, but I'll tell you, generally speaking, I'm not going to bunt with Bogarts. He wants to do it on his own. You can certainly criticize Bogarts and say, you know what, do the right thing. But based on what you just told me, you were ahead in the game, right? You're ahead in the game. I want Bogarts swinging away there and try to blow that sucker open. But yesterday, look, we celebrate this kind of thing now because it never happens. And I get it. I'm not one of these people that wants to sit here and tell you that I want to see bunting because I don't find it all that exciting either. But yesterday, it was what you had to do to win the game. And this is my greater point. Just keep winning games. I don't care whether they're 8 behind the Rays, 5 behind the Rays, 2 behind the Yankees. I don't care about any of that. What I know is that 6-13 sucks and you need to win games. So whatever it takes to win them, you do it. First and second, bunt them over, take second and third, and then somebody just hit the effing ball in the air and get the run home. Not that hard. And then close that sucker out in the bottom of the 11th, which is what the Red Sox did. I want to get to that, too. Who closed yesterday, how that went. And also, really what was the biggest story of the weekend, and honestly has been advanced a little bit today, according to a report recently by Kenny Rosenthal, Murray has the update on what is breaking news with the Red Sox. He's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Or details.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
There's some steps to go medically with Nate, but what's your level of concern with what he's dealing with currently?
He'll be fine. I mean, he's going to see the doctor on Monday. They'll make a decision. He went through it already, so we saw what happened last year. So, I mean, for how quote-unquote bad it is, you know, it's not horrible, so we know he's going to be back, and he did it last year. He knows what he went through. If something else has to happen, so you know, I'm optimistic.
Boy, one thing I know for sure, Alex Cora will never be a talk show host. Not with that kind of optimism. Like, are you kidding me? So listen to this. Nathan Eovaldi goes out against the Yankees last week, pitches six innings, I think six strikeouts, one walk, like easily his best game of the year. And all of a sudden you go, oh, okay. Well, there you go. And he pitched well against the Yankees last year, if you remember that. So fine, here we go. The Red Sox get to Tampa over the weekend. They tell us that Nathan Eovaldi's probably going to need surgery and that he's going to end up on the DL for 2 months. And Alex Cora says, no big deal. That's good. No, he's fine. No big deal. They'll go in, they'll clean it up. He'll be back at the end of the year or in the middle of the year. Silly me. I thought you lose a pitcher any amount of time, that's a bad thing. I never knew that this was a good thing. And Kenny Rosenthal of The Athletic has since confirmed and tweeted today that Nathan Eovaldi is going to have surgery tomorrow to remove, quote-unquote, loose bodies from his right pitching elbow and will be lost for 4 to 6 weeks. Which means 6 to 8. Sorry, again.
Oh, no, you're 100% right. And plus, you can never take this team at their word when it comes to injuries. They're either lying or they get it wrong.
I mean, see, silly me. I live in this place called reality. Like, and I hear a guy has to get cut, and I say, I know it's a scope job. Okay, I know it's a scope job, again, to remove bone chips or whatever else it is that's floating around in his elbow. But even so, I say it has to heal. It has to heal. And then with Nathan Eovaldi, based on his history, it's going to be something else. And so I hate to go back to this because I wanted the guy back too. But all of you who got mad at me for telling you that $17 million a year for a pitcher like him was way too much money, boy, are you eating crow now. $17 million bucks. And I like Eovaldi too, but that contract now is prohibitive. The Red Sox are up against the luxury tax, and they can't go out and get a replacement for Nathan Eovaldi. Meanwhile, Chris Sale's not throwing the ball well. Eduardo Rodriguez has been better his last couple of times out. Steven Wright's been popped for PEDs. So Hector Velasquez is in your rotation. And because of a rainout today, you've got two tomorrow, and you're going to have to use five starters in the next 4 days, which means you're going to need a starting pitcher over the weekend. So now the Red Sox have a number of options at their disposal there, I guess. Brian Johnson, in theory, could come back up. Or is he on the injured list too?
Who's this Brian Johnson?
Isn't he on the injured list?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So like all of a sudden you have this pitching issue. For some reason I was thinking that Johnson's down in the minors. He's on the injured list. So you have all these issues. And as it pertains to Eovaldi in particular, does anyone remember what this guy was before he came to the Red Sox? See, this is the problem with falling in love with a guy in October or in the second half of a season. And they acquired him, obviously, in the middle of last year. And when they acquired him overall, Eovaldi was good. He was great in the postseason. He was a little inconsistent here, but overall in 12 games, 11 starts, Eovaldi went 3-3 with a 3.33 ERA, a lot of strikes, 48 strikeouts and 12 walks. Good. And in the postseason, they were able to use him in the bullpen, and they were able to really impact playoff series because of his stuff. Then they gave him 4 years and $68 million. So again, I want to make this part clear because I don't want this to come off as revisionist history. I wanted him back too. Jim Murray, did you want Eovaldi back?
Yeah, I did. And I actually had no problem with the money.
Okay. Jimmy Stewart, did you want Nathan Eovaldi back last October?
I did, but not at that price.
Okay. So I just think the price is exorbitant and now it's affecting your ability to do other things. So, and remember that Eovaldi, in part, the idea was when they signed Chris Sale, wow, look at their rotation. For the next 4 years or 3 or 4 years at a minimum, you are going to have Price, Eovaldi, Eddie Rodriguez, and Sale. You are going to have those guys at the center of your rotation for basically the next 3 or 4 years. Do you feel about it the same way today that you did before the year started when you thought Eovaldi was healthy and you thought he was something different than he really is? So this is the danger. You get the guy for 2 months, three, whatever. You get him for 3 months, and you watch him, and you say, oh, my gosh, you have to have this guy, and you ignore his whole career up to that point.
Yeah, it's recency bias is what they call that mess. We were all riding the high of the postseason.
Do you know what Eovaldi was in his career before he got here?
An under 500 pitcher.
38-46.
That's a yes.
Yeah, but Mavs wins and losses are a bad way to evaluate. Fine.
No, they're not.
Fine. Bad way to evaluate. Fine, no problem. 4.21 ERA.
Feels low.
Only once had he made as many as 30 starts in a season. That was in 2014 with the Marlins when he went 6-14. Okay, he had a good year with the Yankees in 2015. He went 14-3, but his ERA was 4.20. So again, prior to last season, Nathan Eovaldi, 38-46 with a 4.21 ERA and had only made 30 starts in a season once in his career. He has never pitched 200 innings in a season, and that's a manipulation of the facts because, you know, that's what we do. He went 199 2/3 with the Marlins in 2014. So I'll tell you what, we'll give him that one. 6-14 that year, 4.37, we'll call it 200 innings. He wasn't even that good. When he pitched 200 innings, he was mediocre or below. So his ERA that year was 4.37 in the National League where there's no DH. So now you weigh it all out, and the guy gets hot for a few months, and all of a sudden you drop $68 million on his lap. Like, all of a sudden, you've discovered the city of gold, just this hidden treasure somewhere, that's what Nathan Eovaldi was going to be going forward. You deluded yourself. You fell in love with someone you shouldn't have fallen in love with. So what you should have done is gone out and get the next Nathan Eovaldi at the deadline. And this whole idea that, well, you can pitch Eovaldi out of the bullpen at $17 million a year, I mean, that's what a good reliever goes for. How do we know that he'll hold up? Because Eovaldi, you rest him 4 days in between starts and he breaks down. So one of my questions now is this. These loose bodies in Eovaldi's elbow, were they there last October? Were they there in November? Like, does it make a difference to you? And let me ask you two again, Jimmy Stewart and Jim Murray. A lot of guys can pitch with things floating around in their elbows or elbow. And Eovaldi last year had to have a similar procedure to remove loose bodies from his elbow. He missed 2 months. He came back and pitched, and he was good down the stretch. But the fact that there are more of them in there, if the Red Sox knew this during the offseason, does it change your opinion of the signing?
The money, I mean, it's easier to now, like, you know, look at that and say, like, what the hell were you thinking to give him that much money? But no, ultimately, no, because I wanted him back. It's something he's dealt with before and has obviously been able to come back and pitch at a very high level. Like, obviously, look at the postseason last year. So, ultimately, no.
Jimmy?
The money, yes. But if you look at Dave Dombrowski's track record, and he has said this, no pitcher has a clean elbow, and he takes this to the nth degree. Carson Smith, Tyler Thornburg, now Eovaldi.
Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah. Now, pitchers with clean elbow, it doesn't happen, so might as well throw all the money and all these trade chips at them because, whatever, they're all dirty elbows.
And, you know, dare we say Chris Sale? Could we throw his name on that list?
That's probably ownership more, but yeah.
I mean, I look at that one, too, and say, but there's a guy whose shoulder flared up, and they weren't at all worried about giving him $145 million. So now, look, part of it is the Red Sox backed themselves into a corner. They don't have much in the way of minor league talent, particularly minor league pitching, and so here you go. You're going to have to give money to guys on the market. $17 million a year for Nathan Eovaldi, and now he's on the injured list and he's going under the knife tomorrow. Did you really think it was going to be any different here when they signed him? Did you really think he was worth $17 million? Did you really believe that? Because, boy, then you just weren't thinking. You just fell in love with the guy. And now, I'm sorry, but the $17 million is affecting what the Red Sox can do. They're probably $7 or $8 million under that luxury tax threshold. It might even be less. And they don't have anywhere to turn. Steven Wright is popped for PEDs. Brian Johnson's on the IL. Hector Velasquez is now in your rotation. Wait till they start leaning on him. You think he's going to hold up, too? keep an eye on this.
Tony, could they do a Dallas Keuchel contract under the premise of Adrian Beltre a few years ago?
Well, so this is the problem, Jimmy. Like, what are you going to pay him? Because he made 13.2 last year, and if they pay him that, well, it actually ends up being a lot more than that because they go over the luxury tax.
But if they do some funky math like they did with Beltre and it defers to next season?
It doesn't matter. I mean, whether it's deferred money or not, it's still going to, if it's a one-year deal, it's going to go on their luxury tax. So they're porked. They're porked.
They could trade Mookie Betts.
You know, this is one of these things where you start looking at some of the contracts they have, and you wonder how smartly they've spent their money. Maybe that's a topic for another day. Maybe I can do that one tomorrow.
Tony, trade Betts. That gets you $20 million under the tax, and then it replenishes your farm system. Problem solved.
The Red Sox bullpen, that hasn't been all that either lately. And there have been some interesting decisions there that we'll touch on in the next segment when we come back.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
100%.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Big Y matchup of the game is presented by Big Y World Class Market. Big Y serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. Again, the Red Sox rained out tonight. Rained out against the Detroit Tigers over at Fenway Park. However, they will be playing that game tomorrow at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It'll be a day-night doubleheader over at Fenway, a split doubleheader. So the night game will go on as scheduled. And who the hell's pitching the night game tomorrow night?
Velasquez.
Oh, Velasquez, right. That's yeah. Eduardo. That's, what's his name? Evaldi spot.
Correct.
So Hector Velasquez will pitch the night game. Because there's no game tonight, normally I wouldn't give you the Big Y matchup of the game. But the game's going to be played at 1 o'clock tomorrow, and by the time we come on the air, I mean, my point is that we're not going to be on the air again before that game. So I'm going to give you the matchup of the game to watch in tomorrow's day game. On the Red Sox side, Andrew Benintendi against Matt Boyd. Boyd's a left-hander. Benintendi's 4-for-8 against him, and I'll tell you, based on Benintendi's history, watch him against the guys he hits well. It seems like every time there's a matchup for him in his favor, there are certain guys he just annihilates him more than any guy I think I've ever seen. Like, the specific pitcher matchup seems to matter with Benintendi. Like, every time you find one, oh, he hits this guy, sure enough, he gets in the game and hits him. Like, I want to say Luis Severino of the Yankees. Every time Benintendi goes against him, he destroys him. So keep an eye on Benintendi against Matt Boyd. And here's one for you. Miguel Cabrera against Chris Sale. Cabrera, with the Tigers a long time. Sale was in the AL Central. They face each other quite a bit. Cabrera in his career against Sale is 15-for-53. That's a .283 average with an OPS of .925. 4 home runs. 7 RBI, 10 walks, 18 strikeouts. I'm not sure he's the player he used to be. Do you realize he has no home runs? Do you guys know that?
I did not.
Is he 40?
Probably. I mean, he's listed at 36.
He looks more 40. I'm not buying 36 at all.
Okay, but again.
Those are fudged papers.
Well, it's the Caribbean tax, Murray.
Yeah.
So he's 36, according to baseballreference.com. The Caribbean tax typically is about 10%, which in this case is 3.6, which puts him, if we round off, at 40. So I think you're right, Murray. I think Miguel Cabrera is 40 years old. That would be my math on Miguel Cabrera. Okay? Let me ask you this quick question, because you got to give me a yes or no answer, because I asked you this off the air. Miguel Cabrera, Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Okay. Adam Jones, what about you?
Yes.
You say yes on Miggy?
Yeah.
I'm a yes on Miguel Cabrera.
MVP.
Back-to-back MVPs. And
triple crown.
Won a triple crown.
Like,
yeah. Career
OPS. He's won World Series. Yeah.
And his OPS is in the mid-900s.
Like, by today's standards, he should be first ballot.
Yeah. I mean, Miguel Cabrera, to me, is a Hall of Famer. All right, Jones, what do you got?
Are you a thumbs up or a thumbs down on Darwin Zahn? Something called Darwin Zahn Hernandez maybe getting a start tomorrow.
Oh, that's the young kid they have at Double A, right?
I believe he's their most advanced. I don't know if he's their top pitching prospect, but their most advanced pitching prospect. Which in this system, I don't know if that means anything.
Over Sale or Vasquez?
Over Vasquez, Velasquez probably.
Carrabas said a little birdie told him to be on the lookout for Hernandez spot start tomorrow.
Okay, so
that might be your extra starter instead of the weekend. It might be in the doubleheader.
Okay, so you have that latitude to call up an extra player for a doubleheader, right?
Right. True. Yes.
Don't they have that stupid rule?
Yeah. 26 guys.
This is why they're going to do it that way, right? And then they'll pitch Velasquez over the weekend, or maybe they bump him back a day because they're going to need an extra starter, and there's no two ways about it. So that to me makes all the sense in the world.
Anyways, lots on the Bruins and Celtics. How you feeling about both those teams? Bruins taking forever. Still got a game 7 tomorrow. Celtics already done. So we got plenty of thoughts on both.
Okay, so Jones is next with Christian Arcan. Murray's Get Your Headlines. We'll see you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.